Hi, I'm glad to be here tonight with you. I live in Flint, so I'm glad to be pretty much anywhere. Yeah. We got Flint people here? Look at them, they just glad to be alive. Jesus, yes, we made it to the night. I had a nice relaxing drive up 75 there, enjoyed the little dead animal museum. I'm from a political family in Flint. My uncle Floyd J. McCree was the first black mayor of a metropolitan city in the United States. Thank you. Thanks. Wait, he's not clapping. He's just like, good for you, porch monkey. Nice job. This lady's not real sure right here. She's like, can he call himself a porch monkey? What's the protocol here? I don't know what they call themselves. He changes every year. My uncle was the mayor of Flint back in 1966 under the weak form of government, which means he was elected from within the city council. So there were like 8 white guys on the council, and then my uncle. And it's almost like the white guys got together and said, wouldn't it be funny if we made the black guy mayor?
Okay, this is Arthur Bush. You're listening to Radio Free Flint, and today we have a treat. We have Brian McCree, a comedian from Flint, Michigan, who is here to tell us his story. He is, I think, I got to ask this first. Are you a Flintstone?
Am I what?
Are you a Flintstone?
All day.
All right, then. And he's a Flintstone. And it's my honor, Brian, to have you as my guest on Radio Free Flint.
It's an honor to be here with you, Art.
Most people don't like to find the prosecutor. They usually would prefer not to meet them.
Especially if they're black.
I love working fundraisers. But they scare me a little bit because y'all always had these silent auctions. As you know, black people, we haven't had the greatest experience with auctions. Sure enough, last one that I was at, I got bid on. Next thing you know, I'm standing in some old white people's lawn holding a lantern all night. That lawn jockey is 6'1".
You're gonna get one. Yeah, that,
good fortune of never having to meet it.
I wanted to ask you a couple questions now that I got your introduction out of the way. If you have some more things that you want to brag about, let me know right now. You got anything else?
Oh, I don't know. I've been doing stand-up comedy for 41 years now. Actor, writer, Flint native.
Brian, you've also appeared on Comedy Central. I got that. And then there's Mad TV. Is it Mad TV?
Yep, Mad TV.
Like Alfred Newman type Mad TV?
Well, you know, yeah.
I guess I got that channel. I'm not rich enough to have that channel, I guess. Oh, it's Fox. I don't watch that either. A lot of reasons. It has nothing to do with comedy.
Yeah, it didn't used to be that way.
My biggest question to you is it possible to make Flint laugh?
Oh, yeah. Flint has a great sense of humor.
They do?
Yeah.
How does it compare to some other places you've been?
I don't know. I will tell you this about Flint, that Flint, as well as Detroit, if they love you, they love you hard. If they hate you, they hate you even harder. But there's much love in this city.
Now, does that mean when they hate you harder, does that mean they jump up on stage and slap you?
I wish I would. No, that's a new development. And I've actually been bum rushed before on the stage, but I've been very fortunate to have great wait staff and great security come to my rescue. But No, they don't tend to jump up on stage like that.
Well, you also come from a town with some great boxers. So
yeah,
just watching those guys over the years, you had to learn a step or two.
Yeah, well, right? I got pre-existing conditions, so I'll fight you for about 8 seconds. I got to get you quick.
what neighborhood did you grow up in?
South Side, right up the street from Coca-Cola on Lapeer Road.
And that just missed the bombing of Flint?
I don't know about bombing. I-69, I remember when I-69 went through there when I was a kid, and we used to ride our bikes down I-69 when it was just dirt.
I remember that too. But the bombing refers to, I interviewed Norman Bryant, who you probably have heard of before, was former school board president, Flint school board president, and also the founder of the African American Hall of Fame. And he says, Art, they bombed this. The city was good until they bombed it. And I said, what do you mean Norm bombed it? He meant that they built the expressway through Floral Park in St. John's. I had never heard this expression before. And I found out, interestingly, that it's used by a lot of people of Norm's age, which is now in his 80s, and to describe that period of time. But when you look back at it, that single act may have changed a whole lot of things in Flint. Flint might have been a whole different story if that hadn't have happened.
It might have been. That was quite a little community from what I understand.
In some ways, that I-69 propelled Floyd McCree into the national spotlight with the fair housing activity.
Fun fact about that, my doctor at the time, T. Wendell Williams, he was the thing that ignited that. He wanted to buy a house in this neighborhood, and they would not sell it to him. And that started the whole conversation.
Yeah, then they all moved to Grand Blanc, right?
Yeah, or Flint Township, which wants to be something else now.
The Great White, being known as in French as Grand Blanc, has virtually an all African American basketball team, which, if you've been around Flint for any length of time, is sort of makes you kind of chuckle a little bit.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but we used to have great ball teams, and it's really a shame that it's all moved to the burbs now.
So, did you go to Southwestern High School?
I did. Okay. No, I went to Southwestern. I took, but this was back at the time where they were starting the magnet program. So I did have the pleasure of going to Central for a period. I took acting over there.
And what was there a teacher there that influenced you?
Yeah, but don't. If I had to call their name, I couldn't tell you. But yeah, I had a great time over there at Central doing plays and whatnot.
Is there somebody in your family? I mean, obviously, your uncle's well-known, and I'd even say famous in the Flint area. But is there somebody in your family that influenced you to become a comedian?
I would say that my neighborhood and my juxtaposition in the family. So I'm the youngest of three boys, the runt of the litter, as a matter of fact. And my brothers were giants. You know, my oldest brother was like, he ended up being 6'7", but growing up, he was the tallest person any of us knew. And then my other brother was tall the other way. He was wide. He was 300 pounds, played football, you know. So here's this little scrawny kid with pre-existing conditions fighting for his life out there. And I think that's where my sense of humor came from. And, you know, the period of time when I grew up back in the 60s, playing the dozens was how we had fun. And that's why I attributed a lot of my humor to my neighborhood where I grew up, because everyone was funny. Everyone played the dozen, and you had to be able to play the dozen to survive out there.
Now tell us the dozens. There's some people might not know what that is.
Yeah, so for you white folks that don't know what the dozens is your mama joke when you talk about somebody's mama. You can get your ass kicked if you're not smooth with it. But luckily, I was smooth with mine, and luckily I had big friends, too. I had a woman on social media who I grew up with, evidently, and actually, I grew up with her cousin, and she heard legend about me on the Southwestern school bus talking shit. So she skipped school from Central. She told me that she skipped school from Central to get on our bus to hear me talk shit in the morning. Because that's how funny I used to be.
I guess your roots in comedy go back to your neighborhood, apparently, to your camp or your hut or whatever it was that you guys made over there.
Yeah, the tribe.
There you go.
Yeah.
We had our own in the South. I grew up in the South End as well. We had our own.
Okay.
I grew up on Pengally Road. And
yeah, I actually lived in Pengally Apartment.
So you got it.
Oh, yeah.
And where Pengally Apartments were was an old wooded part of the General Motors dump. In fact, I'm not telling any secrets. It ain't already out. But that apartment house was built on top of the dump.
Oh, damn.
And when we were kids, and some of that stuff's still underneath there, like hoods and fenders from cars, and they were working their way up through the soil, and we would make camps there. We played in this stuff, which was a place where the General Motors had dumped paints, lacquers, thinners, other kinds of chemicals laced with lead.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So that's what they did in that playground. And then they came along and cut down all the trees, and then they built the beautiful Pengally Apartments right on top of the dump. So
nice. Nice. Was Sicily's Pizza over there when you grew up?
Yeah, I was weaned on that stuff.
Oh, man. It closed, right?
Yeah, I know. In fact, Patricia just passed. Patricia, Patty, and John, she and her husband owned that place for many years, and she just passed away here recently.
Is that why they closed?
No, they closed because they wanted to retire, and it ended maybe one of the greatest pizza joints in the whole region.
The best, yeah. Yeah, we were all heartbroken when it went down. We had Sicily's at least once a week.
It warmed my heart a little bit to know that you are a true Flintstone. And the fact is, I've asked every guest that I've ever talked to on this thing, which is about 140 now or 50 or something like that, and I asked everyone whether they're Flintstones. I only had one say they were a Flintstone. How do you know somebody's a Flintstone is if they pay union dues.
Yeah. Well, now I paid different union dues. I paid SAG-AFTRA.
Do you still pay dues, or did you decide that wasn't necessary?
I don't pay them anymore. I'm doing more comedy than acting anymore, but I used to do a lot of acting. Actually moved out to L.A. Back in 1999 to pursue acting.
I see. Now, did you get any good gigs?
I did. I got the Mad TV when I was out there. Made a lot of connections. You know, it's interesting, though, because I've had breaks happen to me that didn't happen for me out there, actually happened for me here. Like when I did Byron Allen's Comics Unleashed with Byron Allen, I got that from Flint.
Really?
Yeah, a buddy of mine had done it, and they were looking for Black comics to be on the show, and he referred me, and I actually had to do an audition over the telephone. Which was kind of funny because the producer called me at dinner time and we're all sitting down to dinner and he's like, hey, this is so-and-so from Mad TV. Wanted to talk to you about doing the show. And they were like, let me hear you. I'm like, what? Okay. So I started doing my act right there on the telephone at the dinner table.
And you can just do it like that. It's just all improvisational off the cuff.
I mean, it's written material I was doing for him. I wasn't improvising. You know, I was doing my act.
Let's talk about that for a second. Your roots are in the city, obviously. That's the city of Flint in particular. You do have, you know, bona fides in the urban community. Is that reflected in your act?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Well, I have a bit, and it's a true story. I have a bit that goes, the economy's so bad in Flint. Last week, I saw a pimp on a bike.
Good to see you, man. Good to be here tonight. Oh, I'm from Flint, so I'm glad to be pretty much anywhere. Yeah. 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 Where my Flint people at by applause? Make some noise, Flint. Yeah. Look, Flint people just glad to wake up without a bullet in their ass. Jesus, yes, we made it through the night. Man, Flint, man, that's my crib, but it's hard living there. They make it hard for you to be loyal to Flint now, don't they? Water bill so damn high. Suddenly I'm bathing in Merlot. See, I grew up in Flint when we had the best of everything, you guys. I grew up in Flint when we were the home of General Motors. right? The Buick, yeah. The Buick was invented in my hometown. Yeah. Now the economy is so bad, you guys. Last week I saw a pimp on a bike. Ring, ring, bitch. Don't make me put this kickstand down. And I don't know the last time y'all rode a 10-speed with a pimp hat on, but that shit is not aerodynamic. It is hard to regulate your hose while you holding your pimp hat on your head. You talk to a hoe lately? They'll be like, psh, I ain't giving him shit. Because that's how hoes walk to me. Any hoes here tonight?
And true story, I was picking my daughter up from Eisenhower. No, I take that back. She was going to Southwestern at the time. And we dropped her little friend off near Chevy in the Hole. And we're coming back up by the point right by La Azteca Taco House. And we literally saw a pimp on a bike. And his girl was in the bike path walking. And he was on his bike talking mad shit. Like, you better get my money. Like you see on TV, bitch, you better get my money. So that's how that bit was born.
Obviously, you're a student of this comedy genre. Who's your favorite comedian?
Richard Pryor is my comedy god. No one's funnier than Richard.
What do you think his funniest act was?
My favorite of his, of course, Niggas Crazy, which was his huge breakout album. And we used to sneak down in the basement. And we had it on 8-track at the time. And we would sneak down in my parents' basement and listen to Richard Pryor on 8-track.
How'd your mom and dad take that?
They didn't hear us. They worked hard. My dad had like 3 jobs and mom was working all the time. So we had a lot of time by ourselves. So yeah, we had a lot of time to be able to listen to that stuff.
Now, Richard Pryor became a great actor over time. What was it about him that you liked the most?
He was just so real. He changed the game, Art. I mean, you know, comedy used to be a little stuffy and take my wife and, you know, and one-liners. And he just broke it down to the rawness and just exposed that rawness of oneself that we do now. Like, if you do comedy now and don't share anything about yourself, it's like you're not really even doing comedy.
Yeah, he has a lot of self-depreciating humor, doesn't he? So let me ask you one more question. Richard Pryor obviously paved the path for a lot of other people in comedy. And along comes Chris Rock, who I like. And I think my favorite joke of his is that his solution for crime is that we need a bullet tax.
Yep.
We need a tax of bullets. Because if it was $5,000 a bullet, there, as he says, there wouldn't be any innocent bystanders.
That's right.
How do you attribute his success? I mean, the American people obviously love that guy.
He was fortunate enough to have the cosign of Eddie Murphy. So yeah. Eddie Murphy saw him in New York, from what I understand, and flew him out to L.A. And Eddie Murphy helped a lot of comedians, and Chris being one of them.
Now, you've worked with some pretty well-known people over the years. So, tell us about that. Tell us some of the names of people that you've worked with and maybe give us an anecdote or two.
Oh, man, I worked with the first famous person I worked with was Sinbad. And Sinbad was the most down-to-earth comic I've ever worked with in my life. And, you know, he was pretty famous at the time. He was freshly off winning Star Search. And I walked in the dressing room to meet him, and he was ironing. You know, he used to wear those big parachute pants. And he was ironing his own parachute pants there. Yeah, and it kind of surprised me that someone of his stature would be ironing his own clothes that way. George Wallace. George Wallace is an amazing guy. met George Wallace for the first time in Kansas City at a place called Stanford's and Sons. And George Wallace was so fucking cool, man. He sent word down. He was up in a green room upstairs at the comedy club that I didn't even know existed. So he sent for me. He said, send me a feature act up here to meet me. So I went up there and talked to George, and he had all this soul food, like huge platters of soul food. And he wanted me to eat some. He's like, dude, eat some of this soul food. I'm like, George, I can't eat that right now. I'm about to go on stage in about 5 minutes. He said, man, wherever I go in the country, these black church women, they cook for me. And they bring these platters of soul food to the show, you know, and I could never eat it all. So and I worked with him again on Comics Unleashed with Byron Allen. Robert Schimmel. Robert Schimmel was an awesome dude, man. Now, Robert Schimmel is Jewish, and we worked together in Dayton, Ohio. And as a black comic, people come up and tell you the most racist ass jokes and think that you'll find them funny. So one night after a show, this guy comes up and just told me the most racist fucking joke. And he walked away. And Robert Schimmel was so, he was madder than I was because I'm used to it. Schimmel was steamy. He looked at me, he's like, does that shit happen all the time? I'm like, yeah, pretty much. But yeah, Robert Schimmel was a really good dude too.
You were raised in a home that, you know, was really an advocate during the heart of the civil rights movement for civil rights and human rights in a city that, you know, where it was all real. As you go around the country, and you do a national act, I understand. Mm-hmm. Do you see places like Flint, or is Flint unique in some way? Or do you?
Now, there are other industrial cities like Flint, but I have to say Flint is very unique in the fact that, I don't know, there's just a sense of humor that's different here. And I will say this about Flint. Even though we had that time in the 60s where things were bad, we're in a place right now, especially after the water crisis, where race isn't an issue anymore. People don't care about race around here anymore. We're trying to survive as a whole community. And you might be somewhere else in the country and somebody might yell a racial epithet at you, but they yell something else at you here. It's not about race and Flint anymore. Yeah. That's the cool thing I find about Flint.
Yeah, there's also a sense of activism in this city. I mean, it's part of the DNA of Flint. I mean, people get here, they get pissed. They don't just start walking away and say, that's too bad, or I'm sorry to bother you.
No, they'll fight. They fight.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. That's another thing about Flint is we're a town full of fighters, man. And the other thing I love about Flint art is that we can talk about Flint. We don't let other people that aren't from here talk about it. You can't live out in Holly and talk shit about Flint. You'll get your ass fucked up.
Yeah. You know, somebody else told me exactly in those words the same thing. Rico Phillips. I don't know if you know Rico, but Rico Phillips is an interesting guy.
Oh, he's the fireman?
He's the fireman. And now he works as a diversity. He's a diversity director for the Ontario Hockey League.
Yeah. I'm hip to Rico. Yeah. We don't play that shit, man. I was at the Holly Hotel once. And this lady was steaming. She comes upstairs and she tells one of the owners, she's like, that comic down there is talking about Flint and she's ripping it a new ass. And she looked at him very calmly and was like, well, he pays his taxes there. I think if anyone can talk about Flint, it would be him.
So, yeah. Now, we did lose the Holly Hotel. What impact does that have on comedy? They've had comedy out there for a long time, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. God, one of the first comedy stages I was ever on was probably Holly Hotel. Yeah, I lost an August date there. Yeah, Holly was significant in comedy around here. I mean, you know, people like Tim Allen performed there. There was a guy from Florida named Jerry Elliott. He was very popular at the time. He used to come up here. But yeah, Holly was everything to comedy.
Yeah, you know, I had another friend that lost a gig there too, Mustard's Retreat. Dave Tomalovich and Libby Glover, who's a Southwestern grad, were supposed to play there. They were all jacked up, excited about it now that the pandemic's over, and they lost their gig.
I did actually, they booked me back when they started up again, and I actually did get a date in there. And if you ever get the chance, they've redone the basement where the comedy club is. It is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Wow.
So now, it'll be fabulous when they fix
it. Who are some of the up and coming comedians in the Flint area, if you could give us a couple names.
Man, there's a lot of people that do comedy around here. I can't say of anyone really that's doing it on this level that I do it at, but there's definitely a underground scene taking place here. And I couldn't tell you any names right off the top of my head, but yeah, there's a lot of people trying to break in around here.
I mean, what was the moment that you decided, you know, I think I really want to be a comedian. I think I really want to.
So for me, it was all about acting for a long time. And a good friend of mine, Tony Ennis, who was an actor, a comedian friend of mine, and actually grew up a block away from me. I was on Whittlesey, he was on Chelan, and he was actually my brother's age, 4 years older than me. So I had heard that Tony was doing some comedy things. He was with a comedy troupe, and he came to speak to us at Southwestern when I was still in high school. Came and spoke in my English class. One of my favorite teachers, Mary Ehrlich, was my English teacher. And he came in to speak to us. So he kind of planted the seed then. So we ended up doing a play together in 1981 at McCree Theater, a play called The Mighty Gents. I was the protagonist and Tony Ennis was the antagonist. And after rehearsal sometime, we would go down to Doobie's. You remember Doobie's downtown?
Oh, yeah.
So Doobie's used to have a Monday open mic night. And we used to go down there and hang out, have a few drinks. And one night, Tony looked at me. He's like, man, you're funny, Brian. Why don't you go up and do some stand-up? And I'm like, yeah, why not? So I went on stage and just off the top of my head started doing some things. And they liked it. So I started coming back weekly. And that kind of wet my whistle, man. I always thought I was just going to be an actor. But then I'd always liked comedy, but I didn't know if I could do it professionally. But when I saw Tony and his friends making some money doing it as a troupe, I'm like, yeah, I can do stand-up. I can make some money. So that's what made me get into it.
Now, Flint has had a history of having some people who made their way to the big screen and also to stage. And they've had some famous and maybe not even so famous. Wendell Harris is one.
Andrew Bernhardt.
Yeah. And I think of some of those back in the day, but your reputation as an actor in Flint, I mean, that's what I thought you did.
It is. But then, like I said, back in 1981, I kind of shifted gears and was doing a lot of acting and wasn't as good at stand-up as I wanted to be. So I'm the kind of person that has to focus on something to get really good at it. So I kind of pulled back on acting some and started hitting the road doing a comedy thing and getting my 10,000 hours in.
Is it like flying a plane?
Yeah.
You have so many hours.
Get good. You got to have those hours, man. These kids now, you know, they want a headline right out the gate.
What makes you so funny?
Like I said, being the youngest of three brothers, and also pain makes comedians funny.
Pain,
some either physical or mental, some type of strife. And that's not always true. There are comics like Seinfeld that kind of had a perfect, nice life and still managed to find the funny. But I find that most comics have something painful that triggers the funny in them. So I suffer from sickle cell anemia. And I think that pain triggered something in me to make it's a coping mechanism to deal with my illness.
And obviously you've overcome it. If you had to talk to young people today at Flint Southwestern or whatever they call it these days, what would you say to somebody that was interested in getting involved in either acting or comedy?
Start learning. If you want to do stand-up, there's no real easy path. So these days they have comedy classes, but I'm not a fan. I mean, I guess that's okay. To me, you got to get up there. You got to get on stage. You got to write. You got to write your behind off. And I would say if you want to get in stand-up, start with writing 3 minutes of material that you think is funny and then start going to open mic nights and start working it out and record yourself to see how you look, how you sound, how your words go together, because one little word can throw a joke all the way off.
Yeah.
So I would say find a mentor. Also, and stand up. As far as acting, you can go to acting schools. You can learn how to act. Yeah. Knowledge is the key to any of these professions.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed Brian McCree, comedian from Flint. Please rate us, review us, and subscribe to our podcast at radiofreeflint.media, our website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, thank you for joining us. This is Arthur Bush for Radio Free Flint. Goodbye.